Welcome to Business Game Changers, where you'll hear expert tips on the big issues and the hottest trends to level up your business game. If you're building a career or building a business, this is must-hear radio. Here's your host, Sarah Westall.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. Today's show, we are going to welcome Ed Moy. He's the 38th director of the U.S. Mint. He served under both President Bush and President Obama. This interview was originally supposed to be a Gear Up for 2015 segment, and I was talking to the Gold Fortress Group, and I wanted them to do that segment. And their chief strategist, who is Ed Moy, and I didn't know that at the time, wanted to come on and talk to us. So I thought, you know what, instead of doing a Gear Up for 2015, let's just turn this into a standard segment. And the reason I'm doing that is because when I was talking to him, it originally was supposed to be 10 minutes. And I kind of knew, well, this person is going to be really interesting to talk to. And not that other people who I do a Gear Up 2015 segment with are not interesting, because they all are interesting. But I have so many questions about the gold industry and about the economy and things. And so this interview went on, and it's not that it went on and on, because it was very interesting. It lasted about 40 minutes, and I said, this is just going to be a main segment. It just has to be. So there you go. It's a main segment, and I think you will find it very interesting. At least I know it was very interesting to me. And then after that, I talk with Epitome Wellness for our Gear Up for 2015. And I talk specifically with Richard Lee. He's a Mayo Clinic certified wellness coach, and he works with professionals and people to get unstuck. They help people achieve great things. And then after I'm done with that, I hope you are very patient today. I am bringing on my daughter. She's only 13. And she is going to talk about the company that we built together. It's called AG Studio, and all the things she's learned and what it's all about. So please be patient with her. It's only a 3-minute segment. So she's gonna talk about it, and we will see. And then be patient, and you will hear the interesting interview with Ed Moy after that. Okay, I'm welcoming my daughter Alexis to the program. And we're going to talk about the company that we started together. What is the name of the company?
AG Studio.
And what does AG Studio do?
We sell blankets and journals. We're called AG Studio because of me and my brother.
You mean A for Alexis and G for Gabriel?
That is right.
That's really creative. I bet I didn't come up with that name.
Jokes on jokes.
Okay. What are the blankets like?
Well, they're very soft. They're with a new microfiber. Yes, very warm. Better than baby blankets, for my opinion.
You mean as being soft?
Yeah.
They're really cuddling, aren't they?
Yeah.
Even our dog really likes them, doesn't she?
Yeah.
She steals them from us.
Yeah, it's not fair.
What do they look like?
First batch is with two fairies and a samurai warrior and a dancer, a ballet dancer. And for the next batch, I don't know. Actually, I don't know.
You got to get creative, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, we will. The pictures are high-resolution artist renderings that we got that we licensed from different artists. They're really nice. What are you learning about business by doing this?
I'm learning that people will turn down your sellings, but you just have to get back up and keep going. And I'm also learning how to really sell things.
It's hard sometimes, isn't it, to sell?
Yeah, some people just don't want to buy sometimes.
Yeah, well, that's the reality. So what will you do with the money that we earn in this business?
Well, I'm going to use it to go to Italy. It's coming up. I've been playing hockey since I was 3 years old, and the hockey coaches have given me this opportunity to go to Italy and play for the U.S. in hockey.
So I'm really thankful for that, and I'd really like to go.
So how can people buy one?
If you click on your website for the radio show, you can find it.
There'll be a picture of it and a link.
Yeah.
So people can get to it at any point on our radio show. So are you having fun?
Yes.
It's fun being creative and learning how to do a business. Do you think you'll be an entrepreneur later?
I don't know.
What do you think you're going to do later? Not what my mom does.
I don't know.
So much time.
How about a hockey player?
Yes, Olympian. That would be nice.
Okay, well, thank you very much for telling us all about the business.
It's been a pleasure. Can I go back to TV now?
Other than the fact that I'm not sure if she really wanted to do this interview, I'm really proud of Alexis for doing the interview after all and explaining to us what AG Studio is. Now we are going to welcome Ed Moy to the show. Hi, Ed. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Sarah. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, I've been interested in talking to you for a while because the gold has been a really hot topic over the last 5 years. It's probably been a hot topic amongst a certain group probably forever. But as far as our country goes, there's been a lot more attention given to gold. And so I wanted to talk to you and ask you some questions about it. But first, I want to ask you some general questions because you were the 38th director of the U.S. Mint. And my understanding is that you were appointed by George Bush. And you, how long did you serve?
The director of the United States Mint serves at a 5-year term that is confirmed by the United States Senate.
And can you serve multiple terms? Is it usually just a single term?
Past mint directors serve multiple terms, but in the modern presidency, most mint directors just serve one term. I served 3 years under George Bush and 2 years under President Obama.
Okay. And I noticed that the position is still vacant. Is there a reason why it would be vacant still?
Yeah, it's one of the most desired positions. When you talk about, having an impact in the economy as well as a fun job and that one that's interesting and historical, there's a lot of people that are interested. So I don't know why that continues to be vacant. It ends up hurting the direction of the Mint because a career person ends up stepping up and being the acting director. And they're generally a little bit shyer, so they're willing to take a lot less risk. And as a result, the agency can hurt.
Yeah, is it a strategy thing or is it just partisan politics and they can't get anything done?
Yeah, that's a really good question. You're going to have to ask them about it. But, I also served in the White House in presidential personnel. And so it was my job to help fill all these positions. And we never let a position gather dust. It's important for the American people to have good public servants that lead these things, that end up doing good things for America. And it's a shame that that position's been vacant for so long.
Yeah, it just seems interesting. It's weird. So getting on to some other stuff, there's been a big surge of interest in gold over the last 5 years in the United States. Do you believe that simply because the economy is in rough shape?
That was a big impetus of it, is when the economy started going south, one of the key things that investors look for when there's a lot of uncertainty in the economy is investments in tangible assets. And one of the most common and historical ones is gold, which has been around for 5,000 years. And so that's what kind of sparked the interest. But, gold also, in times of, obviously investors are interested in times of crisis, but when there's no crisis, things are getting better, gold should still be part of a balanced portfolio. And the reason for that is usually when your paper assets, like stocks, bonds, and cash, which are, three major asset categories, those are all dollar-denominated, and when the dollar begins losing value through inflation, gold ends up rising in price. And so you want enough gold in your portfolio to offset the potential downside. So I'd look at gold as an insurance policy.
So it's an insurance policy against inflation, essentially.
That's correct.
So that's why you're interested in gold personally. But I have one thing that is that's always been a question for me is gold seems to be so highly manipulated. So does mm-hmm. that hurt its investment value?
Well, you know, that's an interesting word that you use, the manipulation, because all investments to some degree are manipulated. Stocks are shorted, they're bought long, you can buy futures, you can get derivatives off of those, and all those are manipulated by the market. And gold is subject to the same types of financial instruments that many people would define as manipulation. Bottom line, though, is the gold that that I'm a big advocate for is owning physical gold. It's one thing to own an ETF, of which, you know, another financial institution holds onto that gold, and you kind of buy a share in that organization, and you benefit off the price rises or hurt off the price decreases. It's different than actually owning physical gold. And so when I was director of the United States Mint, the Mint became the largest maker of gold bullion coins in the world, and our demand rose 900% for both our silver and gold bullion coins. And so there's a lot of investors out there that want to hold on to a physical commodity to have control over that.
Well, isn't it true that with an ETF, you don't even, you don't have, so if somebody want, if you want to cash that in, there could be a chance that there's no gold to cash in? I mean, there could be a problem. Is that not true?
Well, yeah. No, that's mostly true. So when you buy an ETF, that share that you own in the ETF does not entitle you to a share of the gold. It only is a share of the proceeds of if the ETF makes profits, you get a split off of that. But you can't redeem that share of the ETF for the equivalent weight of gold from the ETF. And ETFs make money by leveraging that gold. So not only do they own the gold and they benefit from gold's rising price or falling price, but ETFs then loan that gold out for people who want to short gold, and so they'll rent out that gold. And in an ETF, it wouldn't be unusual for 70 to 90 owners.
Oh, geez.
For every ounce of gold that you have there,
and so
that's why I like physical gold. Is when I have a
because it's yours
American Eagle gold coin. That's my gold coin. Nobody else owns a share of that.
It's a real investment. Fine. So, but
absolutely,
financial advisors are really hardcore in wanting you to go into ETFs. In fact, so many of them don't even offer physical gold.
Right, and that's because physical gold is a specialty that is sold through gold bullion dealers, and the investment advisor doesn't get a cut of that. However, the investment advisor gets a cut if he or she sells you a share in ETF. And so they make money by selling you ETF. They don't make money if they sell you gold.
Yeah, so who wants to sell something that doesn't make them any money? Although, could they become a seller of gold, or it just isn't as profitable, so they don't get into it?
It's not that it isn't as profitable. It is more complicated of a transaction. So, when, you know, a typical investment broker deals in bonds and stocks, and they work with brokerage firms, you know, to affect those transactions. But when you have gold, physical gold, you also have to deliver it. And a lot of these investment firms aren't equipped to do the secure delivery that a gold dealer would if you bought it right from a gold dealer.
They have to change their mindset and their infrastructure to make it work, and that's a big deal.
That's exactly right, Sarah.
Okay. So could you just buy gold and put it in a safe in your home? Is that a wise thing to do?
Well, when you buy physical gold, one of the reasons why you buy the physical gold is you want to have it. And you don't want to have difficulty accessing it. So most people, when they buy gold, end up keeping a little bit in a safe place in their home. And they put the balance in their safe deposit box in their bank, their local bank. And then if you end up being able to invest in lots of gold where safety deposit box is no longer practical, There's a lot of very secure depositories that have sprung up all over the United States, mostly in the major cities, that you can store large amounts of gold.
And do you think that is a safe place for it? Let's say if the government, and the government has done this before where they've confiscated gold, would they be able to take your gold out of those depositories?
Very unlikely. So when the government confiscated gold before, it was in 1933, and Roosevelt had become president, and he wanted to stimulate the economy. But back then, there was a gold standard, and you could only print as much money as you had gold to back, and all the money had already been printed. And so the only way that Roosevelt could get enough money to stimulate the economy was to force Americans to turn in all their gold
coins.
Right. And then automatically he tripled the amount of money he could print.
So unless we go back on the gold standard, that wouldn't happen.
That's right. There's really no logical reason, no financial or monetary reason why the federal government would want to confiscate your gold today.
Unless they went back on the gold standard, which would be not something they could feasibly do in with our current infrastructure and what we have going
on. That's correct.
So this is kind of out of the box question, but there's all these rumors and things. Is there gold at Fort Knox? That's where the big U.S. You're laughing. Nobody knows, right?
Well, Sarah, I could tell you, but then I would have to kill you. So, and I like you so much that I
want to
do that.
Oh, that's so funny.
Now, Sarah, actually, as Mint Director, one of my responsibilities is to protect our nation's gold reserves. And so I had oversight over our bullion facility in Fort Knox. And I've been there multiple times, at least several times a year. And I can tell you that there really is gold in Fort Knox. And every year, the Inspector General puts out a audit report where they go into Fort Knox to check all the secure vaults, the seals, et cetera. And they produce this report, which says that there's gold in Fort Knox. And I can actually tell you, physically, I've been there, I've seen it, and the gold that's reported in the audit report is the gold that's in Fort Knox.
Oh, that's cool. That's good to know. How come there's such a rumor mill going that there's no gold there?
Well, from time to time, particularly during the 70s, when the world went off all links to gold, then there was rumors that all these countries, including the United States, ended up selling that gold. And that was one of the few times that it was approved for outside visitors to visit Fort Knox so that all the people, reporters, members of Congress, could end up seeing that there was actually gold there. And right now you're having a similar situation. Central banks all over the world are beginning to ask, do we really have gold? I mean, Germany, for one example, stores a lot of gold at the New York Federal Reserve. And as a result, they've asked the Federal Reserve to allow their people to come in and take a look to make sure the gold is still there. So it's still happening today.
Okay, so that makes sense. Is China stockpiling gold more than what they're saying they're doing?
Yeah, so that's another really good question, and it's really hard to say because the Chinese reporting on their gold buying is pretty opaque, and they only release that information once every 5 or 6 years, and who knows how true that information is. But what we do know is a lot of gold has been transferred from the West, meaning Europe and in the United States, as institutional investors in the West have lost interest in gold. The ETFs, as you mentioned before, have huge stockpiles of gold that's not being leveraged, and they're not making money on it, so they're selling it. That's going through Switzerland, being reprocessed, and a lot of it's being shipped to Asia, and we think a lot of it's been going to China. So China and Russia and a number of other countries like India, their central banks have been buying gold. It's just that we don't know exactly how much China's been buying.
Interesting. So it probably is true. Well, so getting off on a little bit different subject, silver is something that people talk about a lot and say that silver might be just as good or even a better investment as gold. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so I have a few thoughts. And the first one is it depends on the type of investor and what their investment goals are. If you're a relatively small investor and you don't have a lot of disposable income, it's a really big stretch to buy 1 ounce of gold at $11.50, which is what it costs today. Whereas you can buy a lot of silver when silver is trading at $17.
Exactly.
And so silver ends up becoming very affordable for investors that don't have large amounts of money to invest. However, if you do have large amounts of money to invest, then buying the equivalent amount of silver, so what you can buy with 1 ounce of gold, you're going to need an awful big place to store that. And so that's why investors focus on gold. The other aspect here is when you take a look at the long term, people who end up buying silver is more volatile. Mm-hmm. You know, a $2 swing in silver from $17 to $19 is a 10% appreciation. And so you can make a lot of money. A $2 swing in the price of gold from $11.50 to $11.52 is not so much of an appreciation. And so when people invest, they generally take a look at silver as being short-term and more speculative, and they invest in gold for long-term value.
Well, I've been reading that silver is having a lot more industrial usages. I know gold does, because gold is in almost every electronic component that's out there, which the electronic, you know, technology is booming. So that's a huge thing. But so is silver. Silver is becoming more and more used in industry. And so the demand for silver is just going to rise because of the industry usages. Is that accurate?
Yes. So demand will rise as the world economy recovers. There are a lot of industrial uses for silver, and that demand will increase. The other thing to look at with industrial demand is it anchors the price a bit. With silver, because there are other uses for it, those uses have calculated how much money they have to pay for silver, and that keeps silver trading within a certain range. Now, gold has a similar effect for a different reason, and that is that most gold miners right now require roughly $1,200 per ounce to break even.
Oh, wow.
And so that ends up being a floor for gold, meaning that if gold goes beneath $1,200, then gold miners,
they're going to stop.
Worth it for them to produce the gold, and then that's going to constrict supply. And if the demand remains the same, that's going to push the prices up. And so that's why gold's been trading fairly tightly over the last 2 years at around the 1,200 range.
Wow, but see, that seems manipulated to me, because I would think that it wouldn't be at the level of what it just costs to extract it. Because I know, and I would think you know, that the dollar really has lost some value when they're printing out so many, and tell me if I'm wrong here, but how can you print so many dollars and have each dollar be the same value?
Right. And so, you know, that gets into a broader discussion of monetary policy.
It gets pretty complicated.
Go ahead. But in short, you're exactly right. The Federal Reserve stimulus program, both the virtually 0% interest rate as well as quantitative easing, which has pumped $4.5 trillion into the economy, those have distorted both. Whenever a government gets involved in something, especially at that scale, there's always unintended consequences. And one of the big unintended consequences is both the stock market, the bond market, as well as gold have all been distorted. And now Fed news has a greater impact on all those prices than actual earnings are for stocks or the intrinsic value of gold. So in other words, you're right, the Fed policy has been so big that it has made everything else influenced by Fed policy to the fundamentals.
Well, exactly, because everybody watches what the Fed says, and that's how the stock market goes up and down. And
It's tied exactly to what they say.
Yep.
So besides gold and silver, are some of these other metals good to invest in as well?
Well, there's only two other precious metals that are in the bullion market, and that is platinum and palladium. Both of them all have very high industrial uses, but at the same time, they are not popular bullion coins, and so the market for them is dramatically smaller than silver or gold. And so when you invest in something like a precious metal, you want to be able to exchange it and have a ready market for buying and selling. And that's where gold and silver comes into play. And palladium and platinum aren't as popular. So if you're getting into precious metals for the first time, focus on gold and silver. If you're a more sophisticated investor, there are some opportunities with both the palladium and platinum, of which a lot of it comes from Russia. So the recent tensions in Ukraine have greatly influenced the price. And so people who are knowing how to play that made some money over the last 6 months.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, because there's – and it probably will keep going up a little bit, right, if it gets more heated?
Yes. So platinum and palladium are mainly used for catalytic converters, which are used in cars and trucks. And so as the global economy eventually recovers and car and truck demand go up, so will the demand for palladium and platinum.
So what percentage of your portfolio do you recommend to have in gold or silver or other precious metals?
Yeah, so it really depends, again, on the individual investor, how much they have to invest, whether or not they're investing in the short term or long term. And I can tell you what I do for Ed Moy. Ed Moy has at least a decade before I retire. So I still want to invest for the long term. And I'm concerned over what's going on with quantitative easing, what the impact of inflation might be. And so I use gold in my portfolio as an insurance policy. And you never want an insurance policy that's bigger than what you're trying to insure. And so I keep my gold holdings somewhere between 5 and 10% of my overall portfolio, because I want to make sure that if my portfolio does well, I'm not so heavily invested in gold as to eat up my gains on my portfolio. But if my portfolio does go down, I want enough gold there to offset those losses.
Oh, so
for me, it's between 5 and 10%.
You truly see it as an insurance to hedging your bets against the inflation.
I do. And that should be the case whether or not there's a good economy or a bad economy. It's just smart balancing your portfolio so you're adequately diversified.
So,
now, for me, it's a little bit different on my long-term investment, which I have a gold in a gold IRA. In that, when you take a look at all my IRA investments,
yes,
gold is a slightly higher percentage of my assets in my retirement portfolio than they are in my active portfolio.
Okay, so that makes sense. So for short term, you see it as an insurance policy, 5 to 10%. For long term, you see it as a major investment strategy, of which it's a little more than half, a little more than 50.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. So when you take a look at the gold price history over the last 50 years, it's had its ups and downs, but overall the trend is up, and the trend has really been up over the last 10 years.
Oh, it's been a huge surge in gold over the last 10 years. But if it's sitting
ahead
at the cost to extract it, so basically the cost to extract it has gone up as well.
That's right, because the large gold deposits that were easily found 100 years ago aren't there anymore.
Oh, I see.
And what they have to do is, instead of finding a big deposit of gold, now they go back to those old deposits that they've already mined out, and they're processing the dust in order to get the gold. And you have to process a ton of gravel to get 1 gram of gold. And then you have to, so you can imagine how much you need to get 1 ounce of gold.
Well, they claim there's a whole bunch at the core.
Yeah.
You can get to the core. I said they claim there's a whole bunch of gold at the core. I'm just, yeah. I'm throwing a joke in there, and it wasn't funny.
Yes, yeah. So that's what H.G. Wells was thinking when he wrote the book, Journey to the Center of the World.
Yeah, he wanted to get the gold.
Journey to the Center of the Earth. Yeah.
So there's also a big concern that there's going to be huge hyperinflation. And and what are your thoughts on that? I mean, with all this printing and stuff, I mean, there has to be some kind of risk to hyperinflation with all this printing.
Yes. So, you know, here's the Fed's plan, and then this will explain my view on inflation. The Fed's plan to stimulate the economy was to take financial institutions who bought government bonds and mortgage-backed securities, buy them, and hold on to the bonds. You know, Fed holds on to them. They create money to buy the bonds. They buy it from the institution, give the institution a ton of money, and then the Fed then ends up owning these bonds. And when the economy ends up doing well and the stimulus worked, then the Fed plan is to then sell back those bonds back to the economy and take the money that was paid to them and cancel out the money that was printed, and therefore no harm, no foul. So that's their strategy. I think that's a really, really risky strategy. And it's risky for several reasons. One is you're depending on financial institutions to want to buy these bonds back.
Yeah.
And right now they're earning a lot more money taking that money because nobody is borrowing because the economy is not doing great. You know, certainly better than everybody else, but it's a shadow of former self. So nobody is borrowing, and so with all this extra money that they can't loan, what they end up doing is they're investing in the stock market, creating a bubble.
Which is what's going on with the stock market. Yep.
That's right. That's right. And so it's hard for me to imagine that an investment bank's going to want to buy back a bond that produces 2% and trade in the money that they're making 8 or 10% on equity. So I think the Fed policy could work, but it's fraught with danger on all sides. And as a result, while you know I can't make that prediction that we're going to have hyperinflation, I definitely think the risk is there. And as an investor, I want to make sure I'm diversified enough to take care of that risk if it ever comes up.
Well, if they decide to take they can't take the money out of the stock market without killing the stock market.
That's right. And so
what are they going to do? It's almost like it's a permanent fixture in the stock market now.
Well, yeah, and there's talk about, with the end of QE, at least they're not putting more money into the stock market. But now the question is, how do you drain the punch bowl? You know, you've got this raucous party going on. How do you take the money out? And the Fed has said, we don't have a great strategy for that, other than selling the stuff back. And if the market can't take it back, we're willing to hold on to it for 50 years or however long it takes, where we can just sell it back in little bits of pieces over time.
That's what they'd have
to
do.
Yes, that's what they'd have to do, because if they did sell a lot of it, that would also have another unintended consequence of when banks start holding more of these mortgage-backed securities again, that's going to really whack out the mortgage market. And, so there's a ton of risk on the downside and upside with these easing programs. And I don't think the Fed has had it figured out yet. And that's why I'm hedging my risk and making sure I'm diversified with some gold.
That makes sense. Okay, so how does a normal person save for a rainy day?
Well, unlike the federal government, you want to make sure that you spend less than what you make.
Yeah.
And and then
words
and then
of
begin
wisdom.
Putting that. Yes. Well,
Grandma,
it sounds
Grandma
simple, but the federal
that.
Government hasn't figured out how to do it yet.
Yeah, so. Well, I know it's so simple, but it's so obvious, right?
Yes, yes. And then, typically what you do is you'd invest in for my purposes, if you're looking for the long term and not speculation, you're investing in a diversified portfolio. So what you want to do is make sure you have adequate proportions of cash, stocks, bonds, and tangible assets, which includes gold. And then within each of those, you want to make sure you have appropriate diversification. So, for example, stocks, you want to be in various industry sectors that all balance each other out. And even in gold, you know, you want to have some gold bullion. You want to also have a couple of rare gold coins in with that. You want to have both a mixture of gold and silver. If you have a big enough portfolio, you want to add a little bit of platinum to that. And so, you know, the whole goal here is to have enough balance and diversification that over the long run, you minimize your risk, you maximize your return, and when you're ready to cash out, you'll have a nice big nut to depend on.
And we would say that should people have a certain amount of gold just at their home and silver at their home and maybe cash as well?
Mm-hmm. Yes. You know, so you know, part of it is informed by my upbringing. I'm Chinese. I was born here, but my parents were born in China. And when my mom got married, her father-in-law gave her a 24-karat gold necklace with 10 gold coins around it, 10 U.S. gold coins, as well as a bracelet, a 24-karat gold bracelet with 10 U.S. gold coins around it. And what my father-in-law was saying was, not, I love you and I'm so honored and happy to have you as my new daughter-in-law. What he was saying is, in my lifetime, I've gone through the fall of Imperial China and the rise of the warlords, the fall of the warlords, the rise of the nationalists, the fall of the nationalists, the rise of the communists, three banking systems, and two currency changes, and now World War II, Korean War, etc.
Yeah,
and
wow.
So what
yeah.
he was saying, so what he was saying to her is, I want to make sure that you have enough portable wealth around your neck and your wrist that you wear every single day. So if you had to run out of the house in an emergency, to save the family, you would have enough on you to make sure that the Moy family line would continue through the most difficult circumstances.
But you know, it's so interesting because they have a sense of wisdom through all their experiences that they've gone through. And when you haven't gone through something like that, you have a sense of security and maybe a false sense of security because it's been stable throughout your short-lived life. And it's really interesting talking to people with different perspectives.
Yep, absolutely. And so I grew up with that mentality, is that, yes, banking in the United States is a lot more stable than what it was in China, but the events of 2008 show that these two big-to-fail banks could easily go out of business.
I got to tell you, when you brought that up, I still, and I'll probably burned in my brain forever, is when George Bush came on the television and he was terrified. You could tell when he was giving that speech that he was absolutely terrified. And if that's not an indication that we were about ready to collapse, I don't know what it, you know, it was, I've never seen a president of this country look terrified.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, go ahead.
Yeah, and you know, it's just such a hard decision too, because you have this issue of these banks took these huge reckless risks that bankrupted them. But because they were so big, their bankruptcy would have killed the system. Mm-hmm. But if you bailed them out and saved the system, you end up funding more bad behavior.
Oh,
and
well, yeah.
So that's what's called moral. And
they did good things
that,
to help them out, and they just took advantage of all of us.
That's right. And you have the same problem today, Sarah.
Oh, I know.
In that, so we bailed them all out, and then under a Democratic administration, they increased how hard we regulate them. And in the end, you still have these too big to fail banks taking too much risk. And so, you subsidize, when you subsidize behavior, you get more of it.
Well, and they took, and this should make people very angry, they took so much of that money for their own bonuses. We're ready to collapse. We're in dire straits. Companies need things. People are losing their jobs. People are losing their homes, and they're paying out all these extraordinary, you know, these huge bonuses with our money.
Yeah,
I know you've heard that. People have just been
When you take a look at the overall U.S. economy, we're certainly better off today than we were in 2008 and 2009. When you parse that, Wall Street's done a lot better than Main Street has, which is why the common person on the street doesn't feel the recovery like Wall Street and the CEOs have.
Well, I talked to the Senate candidate in today's election day all over the place, and I talked to the Republican candidate, Mike McFadden, and he was talking about offline a little bit, and then we talked about it online when I did his interview, how over 50% of the kids coming out of college today are underemployed. They can't get jobs. Mm-hmm. And that's a indicator, a leading indicator. I teach a business class. That's a leading indicator to a lot of problems. You can't have half of our college kids not getting jobs.
Well, and you know, you add that on to the 92.5 million Americans who are working age who aren't working.
Oh gosh.
That is a record. That is a 40-year historic record of people who aren't working. And it's because of so many people have dropped out of the workforce because it's chronic unemployment that's the reason why the unemployment rate's actually gone down. It's the denominator's gone down, so that's given the impression that things are better. But there's just so many people out of work, and then most of the new jobs created in this economy have been part-time jobs. And that doesn't replace the high-pay manufacturing jobs that existed before the recession.
Exactly. Service jobs are not the same thing as manufacturing-type jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if I don't ask this question, my husband's going to be mad at me. What?
I don't want that.
Save my marriage. Okay, what are the reasonable commission rates for gold? If you're going to be buying gold, what should you? Everybody needs to make a living, right? The people selling to you need to make a living. I understand that you should be paying them commission rates, but what's a reasonable rate?
Yeah, so that's a difficult question, and what I can do is explain where the costs come in, right? So just take it, for example, let's just say an ounce of gold costs $1,200. Well, whoever sells it to you, they have to buy that ounce of gold, and that ounce of gold has to be made. And that's what the United States Mint did, is that we made gold bullion coins.
You're the wholesaler, right?
Right. So we're the wholesalers, and it would cost us, say, $75 to make that gold, that 1 ounce gold coin. And so automatically the price of that gold went from $1,200 to $1,275. And then we wholesale it, to retailers, but really large retailers that end up becoming our distributors. And so they'll buy it from us, for $1,275, and then they'll resell it to a gold dealer and add their margin onto it. And then the gold dealer, when they sell it to you, add their margin onto it. And so that's why when you see advertisements for buying gold coins and gold trades at $1,200, but you're going to pay $1,325 for that gold coin, you think you're getting ripped off. Well, that's a big chunk of that, the manufacturing cost of that gold coin, which when you trade other gold coins, everybody assumes that manufacturing cost. So once you pay for it, that's going, you know, so when you sell it again, you're not going to sell that gold coin for $1,200. It'll sell for $1,275. But then you have the add-on margins from the distributor and then the gold dealer. And then I'll normally add on a percent or two. And then you also have the complicated issue that some people don't have a gold inventory. And so when you buy that gold at a certain price, they then hold on to your money until they can find gold coin that they can buy at that price where they don't lose money on it. And then there are other people who have large gold inventory, but depending on when they bought that gold, they want to sell you the gold that they bought cheaper, so at your price they make it a larger margin, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a more complicated picture than just people adding on their costs.
That makes sense. Okay, so what would, so if gold is going for $1,200 and you end up paying $1,325, that's fairly reasonable.
Yes, and that the other thing that you need to think about is when you're buying gold or silver or any other precious metal, and you pay that markup for it, you have to have the gold or the gold price appreciate enough to cover that amount so that you end up break even or making money on that investment, which is why when you buy precious metals, it's better to buy them for the long term because they're going to appreciate than playing the short term speculative market.
It just doesn't work. It just doesn't work with those with it because you need to make up that because when you're let's say you buy it for $1,325, you're not going to be able to sell. You're not going to have to sell it for $1,200 if that's let's say it's valued at $1,200 with all the costs to produce it and the markups. You might be buying it for $1,325. You can't sell it for $1,325. You can only sell it for maybe $1,275, right? Because the other markups.
That's correct.
Those other markups go to the dealers that need to then resell it in the market. I'm just trying to tell the average person why these costs are and what you should be expecting.
Yes, you've nailed that analysis spot on and. So when you invest in that, I would encourage your listeners to really be educated and end up going with a precious metal dealer that is not a high pressure one, but one that is more consultative and informative and educational through that process. There's a lot of people out there who put a lot of pressure on, who have the world's on fire, you got to buy it tomorrow because gold's going to triple in price soon. I tend to, and where I buy my gold is from people who keep me informed, tell me what the pros and cons are, give me the information so I can make the decision, an informed decision myself.
And you were serving as an advisor and chief strategist for the Fortress Gold Group. And do you serve in roles with other gold companies, or is this the one that you've pretty much staked your claim to because of the way they operate?
Yeah, it's the latter. I joined Fortress Gold because they have the approach that I just outlined. That's where I have my gold IRA. And further, there are independent sources like Inc. Magazine that recently added them to the Inc. 500, which is the 500 fastest growing companies in America, because that approach is so different than what the rest of the gold market is. And so they sell based on education and a lot less by fear. And that really resonates with me that given my reputation, I wanted to be associated with a company that operated like that.
So that's good to know because people are when you're seeing all those ads about gold, I think people are very confused and it seems like a shady industry. I mean, honestly, just don't know where to buy, and so it's nice to know that there's really reputable companies out there that you can invest an IRA in. You can buy gold, you're getting reasonable prices, and they're going to stand behind it.
Yep. Absolutely right. There's so much noise out there. You really want to go with a quality company that's going to be around. There are several objective factors that your listeners can do their own research on. One is most of these companies are ranked by the Better Business Bureau and other third-party rankers. I would also take a look at the state regulators. Each state has a regulatory body that accumulates customer complaints on these various companies. And so you want to take a look at how many complaints they have and what the nature of the complaints have been. There are objective factors out there that can help your listeners make a decision on which company to go with. I've done that work, and that's why I'm with Fortress.
Okay, that makes sense. I have two more quick questions because I know you're a very busy, demanded guy. What do you think about electronic currency? Because banks want to go towards completely electronic currency, and you know, so the government probably does too, so they can track things. What do you think of that?
Yeah, so you know, there's going to be a natural evolution of currency. You know, just the physical form used to be. A physical currency was in precious metal. You know, you had silver dollars, you had gold $20 pieces, and then that went to then paper representations of that. You know, so you ended up having bills, and then the creation of checks and money orders was a substitute for the bill, and then eventually you had electronic commerce where when you deposit a dollar in a bank, that dollar is converted into an electronic dollar that's then put in your savings account. And so the next step beyond that is digital currency, currency that completely exists in cyberspace and never is a representation of a physical dollar out there. And so just the natural evolution of currency says digital currency is going to be in the world's future. Whether it is you know, the dollar created digitally, or whether it's a new digital currency like Bitcoin, you know, I don't know what that future holds, but that's the direction everything's moving in.
It just so it's inevitable that things will be electronic.
And then you also have all the security problems with that too, just with all the credit card hackers and things like that. Show how easily electronic financial transactions can be compromised.
Well, wouldn't you
and
say
so that whole game has to improve?
Well, wouldn't you say then there'd be a whole nother market for gold or some other kind of physical currency as well? I mean, there would have to be outside the mainstream market that would generate.
Yes.
Which may be gold, you know, and silver and.
Yeah. Well, you know, Sarah, my view is usually with things like currency, one thing doesn't stop and a new thing starts. You end up having all these things exist, but in different proportions to each other. So in other words, in a free market, people end up using the form of currency that is the most convenient and most efficient for every single transaction. And so for some, it'll be checks for this, and others will be credit card for that, and others
yeah,
will be
true.
A digital transfer for that. You know, it's just like the entertainment industry. You know, movies were supposed to kill musicals, and TV was supposed to kill movies, and cable was supposed to kill TV, and the internet was supposed to kill cable.
It doesn't work.
All those continue to exist. Maybe fewer people see musicals today than they did 100 years ago. But there's still a niche market for that.
Sure.
Gold's been around for 5,000 years. It's not going away tomorrow. Gold will continue to find a way to be relevant and valuable in the economy.
Just for the industrial usages, period, it's going to be. So you told me that at the beginning offline that you're not, because I know a couple Moys who are just really smart, and you told me that you're not from that line probably because you're not smart like them, and I gotta disagree with you. You're one smart man.
Well, Sarah, you know, all the nice things that you say to me still won't get you a free sample from the mint today.
Oh, well, geez, thanks a lot. Well, you know what? You are such a busy person, and I know that I'm not sure what you think about this, but do you want information up on the radio show about where they can contact you for questions or something like that?
Yes. So if you're interested in contacting me and you have some additional follow-up questions, you can go to my website at edmoy.com. And there's a section there where you can submit questions to me, and I get them directly, and I'm happy to answer any questions that people have. I also accumulate all my media interviews and the op-eds that I write on that website. So if you're interested in reading up more about some of these issues, they're more than happy to go to my website.
Oh, that's great. I'll make sure I put that up on the radio show. And this show, my interview with you took longer than we were originally expecting, but this was so interesting that I'm like, I got to talk to this guy. He knows what he's doing. So
this is great. 80% of my radio interviews go 3 times longer than what they ended up budgeting for, and then they end up breaking it into several different interviews.
So you just go with it, whatever.
It's fun. And Sarah, you've asked some great questions, and I really appreciate the homework you've done on this.
Okay, well, good. Well, thank you, Ed, and I appreciate the conversation today.
Okay, call back anytime.
Okay, great. Thanks. Have a great day.
All right. Bye, Sarah.
Yeah, bye.
As you can see, Ed Moy is a very interesting character. It was fun. It was fun to do that interview. Now I am going to move on to our Gear Up for 2015 segment, and we are going to welcome Richard Lee to the show. He is the co-founder of Epitome Wellness, and he works with people to help them do great things. And today he's going to talk with us about helping people get unstuck.
Hi, Richard. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Sarah. Thanks.
Well, I'm glad that you came. I wanted to talk to you about your interesting background and your interesting company. I think you've helped, from what I understand, you've helped a lot of people overcome a lot of problems. And I think it's a perfect segment for gearing up for 2015. And first of all, before we get too far in this, what does your company do?
Well, simply, we help people get unstuck.
Go ahead.
People get just like when you're walking down the path and you walk into the mire, you get stuck there. And that happens in our lives as well. And it's not something we do deliberately. We just wander into this mire in our life and we get stuck.
And sometimes you're stuck because you just don't think there's any way out. Like you're stuck. Okay, well,
go ahead. That's exactly right. That is the major problem. People think they're stuck.
They just don't feel they can do anything else. What sorts of issues do you commonly see with business professionals and executives that you work with? Basically elaborate on the stuck when it comes to executives and business professionals.
People, it happens to everyone, but sometimes we wake up in the morning and we say, I just don't feel like getting up and doing anything today. And that's the beginning of getting stuck. You lose the belief that you can do it. And so you begin to doubt yourself. And so if you don't take care of it really quickly, you're going to wind up in more doubt and so deeper into the quagmire. And so you may be a very powerful executive, but we all get these moments of getting stuck.
Would you also classify to somebody that, they've always wanted to do something else, but they're just not, it's just not rewarding doing what they are anymore. And they are so busy that they can't figure out what else to do. Do you know what I'm saying?
That's right. That's another way of being stuck. And I call that a generic question of, what do you want to be when you grow up?
Well, and I think that's a
many,
common,
many people.
It seems like it's a common thing with business executives that you get to the point where you go, what really do I want to do? And how do I become more successful? Okay, I have all this experience. I built this company, or I'm now running this division and I'm doing all this stuff, but it's just not fulfilling. And it's just not fulfilling. So what do I do to have it be more fulfilling? Or I know I want to do all these things so I can be successful, but I've never achieved that yet.
What I do with a person like that is I get them to identify where they are in the major areas of their life, on a scale of 1 to 10. Then I go back and ask them how important it is in each of these areas that they want to change that. That gives me a list of priorities that we need to work on. And then I ask them, all right, so you said you'd like to be better in this. Where would you like to be a year from now? And so I go around and ask in each of these categories, where would they like to be a year from now? That does amazing things because it gets them to focus on something that they want to get accomplished. It might not be in the company they're in right now. Maybe there's a lifelong dream they haven't been able to get to because they've been consumed in this job or this guiding this company.
So
they need help.
When you do executive coaching and you do help with professionals, you help them get to the point of what they really can do and get them to almost like brainstorming with what they're capable of. Is that a good way to relate? Is brainstorming a good way to relate or not?
You might say that the session we do is probably could be brainstorming. And then I ask them, well, tell me more about that. Tell me more about that. And so they'll begin to tell me the whole thing as it's in their mind. We all have these questions back there that we haven't answered yet. So I just go into there and I ask them those questions. And so in a sense, that's brainstorming.
You know, because my show is all about, you know, business game changers, is about things that are different in the world or things that are different out there that's really changing the game of business. And how would you say your coaching and your methods does that?
You know, every day I think that we've discovered it all, and I find out more and more every day that we're kind of on the bleeding edge of this. Because people just don't stop and take a look at where they are and where they want to be. And they just go, you know, they went to school, like they went to a good school, they got a good job, and now they work their way up the ladder, but, you know, maybe it wasn't what they wanted to in the beginning. Maybe they never explored that. So helping them to identify what these things are, where they want to go, what they want to do. And then once they've gotten that, they know the steps that they have to take.
See, I teach this, you know, I teach a management class at the University of Minnesota. And one of the things that we teach the students is that you really need to find your passion, because you're going to be a lot more successful focusing on your passion. And the problem in today's world so much is there's this train that you get on. You need to get this education. You need to do this, this, and this, and then go work for a big company and then move yourself up the ladder. But in a lot of reality is that a lot of people just don't fit that mold and they're just not happy. But they're doing it because that's what they think they need to do. And so they're limiting their success.
You're absolutely right. And when I talk to people about that, they say, are you trying to tell me that I shouldn't get a college education? Or I wasted my time getting a college education? I said, no. That's great. But that does not necessarily mean that you have to follow that track.
Well, getting a college education helps you understand how to learn. So you got to, if you're lost, you should at least go study something. That's my philosophy. But, you know, because learning how to learn is an important skill, because whatever you want to do in life, you're going to have to learn how to learn. But everybody's on this track and they don't know really what they want to do. There's so many, being an entrepreneur, and I know that you are as well, there's so many different tracks that you can go on. And a lot of people just see this one track and it just doesn't, life really isn't like that. And you got to get out of your box and figure out ways to be more successful. And, you know, I'm talking a lot about this because I teach a class on this, but I know you are so much more an expert at this than I am, because I've seen some of the things that you've done. So I want you to talk a little bit about what you suggest for people to do to help them get to their inner core and to help them be more successful in 2015.
The number one thing that people need to do is believe in themselves. If you can conceive something, you can accomplish it. And you can't let unbelief stand in your way. You can conceive it. I see it. That's what I want to do. And believe you can do it and go forward and do it. That's the number one thing.
You got to let fear get out of your way, right? The only thing you should fear is fear itself. I know that was stupid, but it's true.
Well, in the Holy Bible, there are 365 times that we're told, be not afraid. That's one for every day of the year. So
because it is,
fear is the thing that gets in our way.
Well, I think people who are successful in their successful executives, business professionals, you get to a certain point and you have all these obligations. So you're afraid to go after that next thing that really could catapult you into what you really want to do. Because success really is whether you're happy. That's my, you know, happy making. And I mean, you have to provide for all the things you need to provide for, but being happy and having passion doing it. But that's, it's, people have a lot of fear just jumping off the bridge and going for it.
You know, I firmly believe in a saying, thoughts become things. So if you think you're afraid of jumping off and doing something, guess what? You're not going to be successful at it. You have to think, yes, that's what it's going to look like for me. I'm going to be that way in a year from now. And that's the goal I'm shooting for. I believe I can do that and go for it. You can't have fear and hold back, because if you focus on the fear, it's going to come true. If you focus on success, that's going to come true. Thoughts become things.
So, Richard, I'm running out of time here a little bit, but can I put your information on the webpage, the radio page, so that people can contact you if they have any questions or if they need help getting unstuck?
Absolutely. I love it. I love it.
Okay.
This is the career I've been waiting for all my life, so this is so much fun.
Okay, well, I'll definitely put your information there, and I appreciate you so much talking to me today.
Thanks, Sarah. Great to talk with you.
Yeah, have
See
a
later.
Great day.
You see gold all over the place now. Advertisements, buy gold. It's a great investment. But the problem is, gold hasn't been a great investment lately. The price of gold, as Ed Moy said, is at the floor, or it's close to the floor. It's at the point where it can't go any lower, because the cost to produce gold, to extract it and get it ready, is about where the price is at now. Maybe it's a little higher, but not much. So we all know it can't go much lower. But why is it so low? And my theory is, and I would bet you 99%, I don't know what I would bet, I'd bet a lot of money on this, is that it's that way because the people who are highly manipulating the gold market want to buy gold right now. Whether it's governments, whether it's the big banks, they all want to buy gold. And why are they wanting to buy gold? And you heard them. It's because there's so much uncertainty. Even Alan Greenspan just last week said that gold is probably a good place to invest right now because of the uncertainty in the market. So there you have it. Gold's a good investment. And if you are stuck, and I bet that half the listeners out there are stuck, you really wish that you would have done something better in your life, or you really wish your company could just get to that next level, but there's something holding you back from getting there. What is it? What is it that makes you fearful? Why aren't you achieving what you want to achieve? Why are you scared? Why are you stuck? So if you are, think about talking to Richard. Visit his website, or maybe if it's not him, think about what you can do to become unstuck. I think it's a really great segment about Gear Up for 2015, because it's what so many people need to succeed, is to just get unstuck and get moving. And then lastly, I got to talk about my daughter. Thank you for listening to her today. And like she said, she's raising money for her trip to Italy to go play hockey for the Team Minnesota representing the United States. And it's a little expensive trip. So we are raising some money, and she's learning about business along the way. And yes, we will be turning this into more of a business so she can learn about creating products and doing different things. And it's been a fun project for us. But if you want to purchase anything for Christmas or for your friends, look at the link on the top of our radio page. You can see what we have and go to our AG Studio website. So that's it for now. Have a great day.